You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
InPlay Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. InPlay Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Hello everyone, welcome along. You're listening to the weekly National Football League podcast here with William Hill. Dave Kellner here in the UK with Beating the Book podcast host Gil Alexander on the line live from Washington DC to preview the remainder of week number 12 in the National Football League. First of all, a warm welcome, a good morning to Gil Alexander stateside, and happy Thanksgiving, Gil.
Dave, thank you very much. A happy Thanksgiving to you. The day when Americans celebrate when English settlers turn colonists, take a one-day break from murdering Native Americans. You know, it's the kind of thing where we step aside and we had a feast and somehow we're still celebrating this day.
Very good. And Gil, we were talking off air. Usually we do your five best picks at the end of the podcast, but there will only be three this week because you went 2-0 last night on the early games, Gil.
Yeah, by the way, I make light of Thanksgiving. I say it, obviously, in sort of shame that that's a day we celebrate, in case anyone misinterpreted that. For me, it was a great day yesterday. I did have two games that I won on the Lions and the Bears late at night. For those who are saying, oh, sure you did, we have it on the video, on the pick six, and the pick six as well that I do for William Hill. But it was one of those days where, you know, the Lions just destroyed the Eagles, Dave, and my whole commentary on the pick six, which is a video we have to make a real quick explanation and move on, was the Lions are just a team with a good attitude right now, and the Eagles are a team with a terrible attitude. Mm. And the Eagles have fallen apart. They are not playing for Chip Kelly, and he ruined that team as a GM. Then you had a Panthers team that just pick-sixed their way against Tony Romo, and poor Tony Romo's hurt again. I didn't play that one. And then the Bears, I just think, are an undervalued football team, and I think they showed that against the Packers, and they won outright, let alone covering that big spread.
Yeah, which was a surprise to many, Gil, because Green Bay had been so competent the week before against a good emerging Minnesota Vikings outfit that you expected maybe Chicago to cover that spread, but to win outright, really damaging as far as the Packers are concerned.
Yeah, and you know, I think we tend to think of the Packers as this juggernaut, and certainly when they were 6-0, we thought of them that way. And then Denver, behind Peyton Manning, and Peyton Manning's last hurrah, perhaps, really smacked them down. But the thing remains with the Packers is that those receivers, without Jordy Nelson, don't get any separation. And I think that, boy, if we ever get the value of a guy like Nelson, you know, we tend to value quarterbacks and quarterbacks alone, but Jordy Nelson has meant a lot to that team, and Aaron Rodgers is a different quarterback without him. He's just not quite as confident behind center, and 6-4 as a result are the Packers now, or 7-4, I should say. They've lost four out of their last five.
Mm. Let's get stuck into this week, Gil, and we'll start with the New York Giants at the Washington Redskins. The Giants 20-29 on the money line here with William Hill. The Redskins are 5-4. The spread is currently set at 3. -3, the Giants, even money. The Redskins +3 with extra juice at 5-6. And the total points has been set at 47 here. The under is 10-11 and the over in the market at 10-11. I think we've talked about the Redskins in passing on previous podcasts, Gil. It seems like we've not analyzed one of their games in a while, though. And for people that haven't listened to the podcast or don't know, you are in Washington, D.C. now, and you're a Redskins fan, Gil. And the Skins 4-6 in the NFC East now. The Giants 5-5 at the top of the division. They're in the hunt, the Redskins, Gil.
They're in the hunt. There's so much to talk about the Redskins. Yes, I grew up in Washington, D.C., and you can take the boy out of D.C. I no longer live there, but you can't take D.C. out of the boy, so I'm here visiting my parents. I love the Redskins still to this day, but they're a shameful bunch, Dave, a shameful bunch. Even with them not playing, they're all over the news. One, I talked about Thanksgiving at the beginning of this podcast. Well, the Redskins yesterday, while not even playing, sent out a happy Thanksgiving message to all their followers on Twitter. But their name itself is deemed by many as a slur to Native Americans. So for them to say happy Thanksgiving was a social media nightmare for them yesterday. They cannot get out of their own way, even when they're not playing football. So that's the first thing. They have that going on. Second thing, though, is they and the Giants both did very well yesterday just in park by having the Cowboys lose and the Eagles lose, both badly. So at 5-5 and 4-6 respectively, the Giants and Redskins are playing what in essence is a de facto game for the NFC East lead, which is just remarkable. And so this is big. And you have a situation with the Redskins where it's a schizophrenic team this year. They're 4-6. When Kirk Cousins throws an interception, one or more, they've lost all six games. When he has not thrown a pick, they've won four games. It's been that simple. So that's the barometer by which the Redskins go. One last thing about Cousins. In baseball, I talk a lot about home-road splits. Cousins is a home-road split guy. At home, and this is a home game for the Redskins, 9 touchdown passes, 0 interceptions, 122.6 passer rating in a 4-game home win streak. It's when he goes on the road that he has a problem. 5 touchdowns, 8 picks with a 69.8 rating in 5 road games. So what Cousins will we see? I guess that's the question.
We've talked disparagingly about Kirk Cousins on this podcast on numerous occasions as well, Gil, whenever we've mentioned the Washington Redskins. But you mentioned their home form there. This game is at FedEx Field, and you mentioned that home-to-away split. And he's got 9 touchdown passes, no interceptions, that passer rating of 122.6 at home. At least the Washington Redskins have had something, or their fans have had something to cheer this season, Gil. And we have talked negatively about Cousins, but at least he's got it done at FedEx Field so far this season.
Yeah, for all those reasons that I was just mentioning, he has really been getting it done at home. Again, very solid. I mean, if you just take those 9 touchdowns and no picks with the 122.6 passer rating at home during the last 4 home games anyway, that's solid by any standard. I mean, that's elite level status. The thing with Cousins is he's a young quarterback, and really he's only played one full NFL season when you look at his NFL career and how many starts he's had. So, you know, he's allowed growing pains, and he was turning the ball over and has been at an epic rate, at really a historical rate. So as long as he cuts that down, they'll be fine. I think on the other side of the ball, though, and by the way, there's no way to really anticipate if he'll throw picks or not. I think the Giants, you know, may very well get one. They may very well not. I think the other side of the ball is where this game is ultimately handicapped, though, because you can't determine that about Cousins. I think what you can determine is that Eli Manning and his receivers, specifically Odell Beckham Jr. and that Giants offense, will be able to move the ball against the Redskins. I think the Redskins' run defense is really, really poor. It has been all season long. And now they've lost Chris Culliver. And they lost Chris Culliver in a Thanksgiving Day practice. Didn't even know these teams practiced Thanksgiving morning. But Culliver tore both his ACL and MCL. He has been a really solid corner for the Redskins this year. And with him out of the game now, and injuries are a part of the game, I just think they don't stop Eli Manning, or they won't stop him enough so that Cousins, even if he doesn't turn the ball over, will be able to keep pace. So it's not one of my top 5 picks this week. But given a choice here, I would lean Giants, even giving the 3.
And this hasn't been a good matchup in recent history either for the Washington Redskins, Gil. Don't hurt me here, but they have dropped 5 straight to New York, which is is disappointing, I suppose, with this being such a bitter rivalry.
Yes, well, thanks for noticing, Dave, first of all. Appreciate that. You know, by the way, we should make a brief aside, because I don't know how much historical the one-on-one, you know, the head-to-head matchup will matter here, but I should make a note that since these Wembley games, the International Series is such a big deal, it has been announced this week. The Redskins, again, besides their social media faux pas, in the news because they will be playing not only one game in London next year at Wembley, but perhaps a second game next year at in London, but not at Wembley, at the alternative stadium,
which name I
can't remember. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It's possible that the Redskins could play the first ever back-to-back games at in the UK. So you have that to look forward to as well. As far as, and I say that sarcastically because I don't know how much better this team is going to be next year, but as far as this game is concerned, yes. I don't know that it affects that historical head-to-head matchup with the Giants will affect the guys who play for the Skins now because it's largely a different roster. About half the guys are still there and half the guys are gone from those previous losses. But I just think that this is a game that could very well – it's an opportunity for the Redskins to stand, however temporarily, atop the NFC East. I don't think they are a team as currently comprised that will be able to take advantage of it.
Okay, leaning with the New York Giants there, -3 at even money. Let's move on. Game of the week, this one for me, Gil. The Pittsburgh Steelers at the Seattle Seahawks at 9:25 p.m. UK time on Sunday. The Steelers 6-4 and sitting second in the AFC North, while the Seahawks are 5-5 and second in the NFC West. Pittsburgh come into this matchup off a bye, and that could be crucial, as could the health of Ben Roethlisberger here as well, Gil. He returned slightly earlier than scheduled following Landry Jones's injury in the divisional match against the Cleveland Browns, and he is a difference maker for this Steelers side on the offense. When he's fit, they can get their receivers going. Doesn't seem to work with anyone else at the helm, Gil.
Yeah, and in many ways, Dave, we have sort of, now I shouldn't say we, I'll speak for myself. In many ways, I have... This is my team that I've treated as the sort of under-the-radar team. In other words, I haven't really noticed them. I've been talking, like everyone, I've been talking about New England, Carolina at the top, and then Arizona sort of the other team. And I, flippantly, Aaron Schatz from Football Outsiders, which is a advanced stats site here in the U.S., he sort of said, it's the undefeated teams, it's the Cardinals, and everybody else seems like they're 4-5. Well, you know what? We should really start paying attention to the Steelers team. They're 6-4, and as you point out, Big Ben is the man, and he, even with injuries, has been able to overcome them. Look, this team, the Steelers as a whole, has been a team that has just handled the absences of offensive stars all year long, and they lead the AFC wildcard race. If the playoffs were to begin today, they're your number one wildcard team. Mm. So Ben Roethlisberger has been able to overcome injuries, and in the case of Le'Veon Bell, their standout running back, D'Angelo Williams, has stepped right in and has played very admirably. And so I think this is a team that I better start noticing, and a lot of people better start noticing, as a real legitimate contender in the AFC.
Antonio Brown as well, Gil. 27 catches in his last two games, which is the fourth highest two-game total in league history. And Martavis Bryant backing him up. Roethlisberger really has some weapons. And as you mentioned there, D'Angelo Williams has plugged in the absence of Le'Veon Bell and still been productive. Similar scenario with Seattle at running back as well. Marshawn Lynch is out. He will be out for the foreseeable future, 3 or 4 games. And Thomas Rawls came in last week, admittedly ran all over the San Francisco 49ers. But in his last couple of starts, he's managed to keep that production going, and it's a small sample size, but Rawls has outperformed Marshawn Lynch.
It is, and I think where you were leading there is probably correct. I probably agree with it, which is, yes, Rawls had 250 yards of total offense last week. Can we expect Rawls to fill the shoes of Marshawn Lynch in the same way that D'Angelo Williams has been able to, mostly, that is, for Le'Veon Bell? And I think the answer is probably not. I mean, we really don't have enough evidence to know for sure, but I'm guessing not. Marshawn Lynch, huge shoes to fill. And this, I mean, I agree with you. This is the most fascinating matchup of the week in the NFL, because you take that Steelers offense with all the players you just mentioned, and for my money, there's not a better wide receiver in the league than Antonio Brown, a perfectionist route runner that is just unparalleled. And Martavis Bryant, every time he touches the ball, you think he's taking it to the house. His percentage of touchdowns per catch in his career is unbelievable. But you take that into Seattle, largely deemed the hardest place to play in the NFL in terms of the crowd support the Seahawks get and the noise level, a Seahawks defense that is still very, very good, and a Seahawks team at 5-5, again, 1 yard away from winning the Super Bowl and getting the repeat last season, to now being considered this mediocre team at 5-5, when in fact all five of their losses still featured leads for the Seahawks in the fourth quarter. So in that 5-5 team, I think we're still seeing, you know, sort of, dare I say, an undervalued team in the defending AFC champion. So, man, I mean, this is a great matchup because we'll, you know, I say this a lot about other teams, but I'll say it here. We're going to find out a lot about both of these teams in this game.
And I think with the Steelers, they're schedule, Gil, it looks tough, doesn't it, with their lead to hopefully what will be a postseason berth for the Steelers. We'll find out more after this week as well with the Steelers. Big game for them, but they've got lots of big games coming up.
They do have lots of big games coming up, and it's also a strange thing because Cincinnati has banked so many wins to this point. The Steelers, you know, sure, they have their sights on the division still, but I think realistically they kind of get there's probably not enough games remaining for them to challenge the division at this point. So it really is about getting the number one wild card position and jockeying for playoff position with so many other teams in the AFC fighting for the wild card. But this, in terms of an interconference game, this won't count much in terms of the tie-breaking that might have to happen for a wild card position in the AFC when push comes to shove down in the final week of the season. But it's still a great game as a barometer to find out how good this football team is. Mm. By the way, conversely, just as big a game for Seattle, who, you know, at this point has a more realistic shot than the Steelers do in terms of chasing the first-place team in their division. The Cardinals are only a few games ahead of them. But the Seahawks still have to keep an eye on their wild card possibilities as well. So this is just a fascinating football game. And again, from a bettability standpoint, in terms of which side you take, I ask a question on my podcast, Dave, which is the game that you are least likely or the one that you want no part of? If you had to bet every single game on the schedule but take a pass on one, this might very well be the game I take a pass on.
Okay, that's the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Seattle Seahawks on Sunday night, 9:25 p.m. start time here in the UK. Let's move on to primetime, Gil. And we'll start with the New England Patriots at the Denver Broncos. Early hours of Monday morning here in the UK, 1:30 a.m. start time. The Patriots 4-6 on the money line. The Broncos are 13-10. And this spread has been set. The Patriots -3 at even money. The Broncos +3 at 5-6. A conference battle here with the Patriots top of the AFC East and the Broncos top of the AFC West. Not the quarterback battle that many anticipated at the start of the season, though, Gil. And we talked about both these franchises on last week's podcast. Mentioned Brock Osweiler as well, and he performed well against the Bears last weekend.
He did. He really did. And as I mentioned last week, it's sort of Gary Kubiak's dream to not have to deal with Peyton Manning. He would never admit that publicly. But now, finally, with Osweiler, he gets to implement the offense of his choosing, a lot of rollouts, a lot of short passing, whereas Peyton Manning is a statue, really, behind center. So hard to even get that sentence out and make it seem like Peyton Manning is not the desirable quarterback. But in the case of Gary Kubiak, I think it is. Listen, I know your Will Hill bosses shudder at the fact that I didn't make a pick in the Steelers-Seahawks game. Here, let me just start out by saying Patriots all day long for me. You're giving 3 points at Denver, and this is a spread that will not change before kickoff. This will be 3 up until kickoff, and it's very simple for me. You're getting the 10-0 Patriots at Denver. Yes, Denver's defense is good, and I'm not saying that Tom Brady won't have his challenges, especially with, you know, a receiving core that is depleted beyond belief. They lost Aaron Dobson even this week additionally for the Patriots, and we already have documented all the previous losses they've had on that offense. But you're giving me Tom Brady against Brock Osweiler in a quarterback league, and here is a key note. Quarterbacks making their first or second start versus Bill Belichick since 2001, Dave, they're 1-8 straight up. Now, I know we're dealing with a 3-point spread here, but Bill Belichick knows how to frustrate young, inexperienced opposing quarterbacks. If you just give me that line alone, and that's all I knew about this game, that's a key bit of information for me. Sometimes we make this more complicated than it is, so I really love the Patriots here to go 11-0 and cover in the process.
-3, the Patriots, the pick at even money. One thing that stands out for me as far as this matchup is concerned. You've mentioned that New England are depleted, lost Aaron Dobson, Danny Amendola as well out for this game. If they continue how they've been going, it might only be Brady and Rob Gronkowski very shortly, Gil, because Dion Lewis was lost earlier on in the season as well. They'd still probably find a way to win. That's what Bill Belichick does, and it's something we mentioned on last week's podcast, how he... this franchise can continue to adapt despite the injuries, and that's where some other franchises fall down.
Well, I would say 31 other franchises fall down in trying to do so. You know, with the Ravens, for instance, who we'll talk about momentarily, there's so many key injuries, and we just sort of throw up our arms and we're like, yeah, I mean, how could any team overcome that? But yet the Patriots do, you know, with the exception of losing the two key cogs in Brady and Gronkowski. Everybody around them has taken a hit, and yet they overcome it because of superior coaching. We talked also last week about the fact that they've used now, updating, over 20 different offensive line combinations. That is simply unheard of in 10 games. 20-plus offensive line combinations, and yet they keep plugging and playing and keep overcoming. When we think about the Broncos defense, because I do want to point out this fact, I get this from Mike Sando over at ESPN, who talks about expected points allowed for the advanced metrics guys out there. The Broncos defense, who we think of as one of the best, if not the best in the NFL, weeks 1 through 7 this year, they were plus 10 points in expected points added. That over a 7-week span is the fifth best, plus 10 expected points added, is the fifth best mark in any 7-game span out of 320 defenses over the last 10 years. So you take the last 10 years of NFL play, all the defenses that have played over that decade, that's the fifth best expected points added performance. But, and by the way, the Pats D over that same span, they were minus 4.6 in expected points added. That's 268th out of those 320. But since week 8 till now, short sample size, but still, you know, enough games that it matters. The Pats have flipped that. They're plus 3.5 per game in expected points added, fifth in the NFL over that span, whereas the Broncos have dropped to 10th over that span. Now, the Broncos defense has had some injuries in Aqib Talib, who left the lineup and is now back in it. But I guess I say that just to convey the fact that the Patriots defense right now is actually better than the Broncos defense. And if you're giving me Brady to combat the Broncos defense and Osweiler to combat a really underrated Patriots defense, it's Brady all day long.
Yeah, and that Patriots defense as well, Gil, so strong against the run, and I think that is crucial in this matchup, because it's all right Osweiler producing last week against Chicago when the Broncos had 170 yards on the ground. If the New England Patriots play as they have done since week 8, as you mentioned, and they can stop the run, that's going to force Osweiler to throw the ball more, and that's where the Patriots can take advantage.
Yeah, and only the Broncos... Yes, absolutely. The Broncos did have success running the ball last week. I'm sure they have every thought that they're going to have that success again this coming week. I am with you. I don't believe they will. I think they'll revert to the offensive running game struggles that have plagued them all season long, perhaps not quite as much as they did with Peyton Manning. But I just like the Patriots on both sides of the ball. And Bill Belichick is the X factor. I mean, I know Brady and Gronk goes without saying that they're the X factors, but really, when it comes down to the coaches, and I'm only giving 3 on the road, you know, even if I lose this game backing the Patriots, it's still a play that I'd have no regrets about. I'd be like, really? I mean, I'm going to kill myself for going with Belichick, you know, Brady against Osweiler? This, to me, is the no-brainer play of the week.
Okay, that's the New England Patriots at the Denver Broncos. And we finish with Monday Night Football, Gil. Baltimore Ravens at the Cleveland Browns. The Ravens 7-5, the Browns are 5-8. And the spread here, plus 3, the Baltimore Ravens at 10-11. The Cleveland Browns minus 3 at 10-11. And the points total has been set at 41. The under 10-11. And the over is also 10-11. Gil, you've given us a dud here, a Monday Night Football dud. It really is.
You are welcome, Dave.
This AFC North matchup, I suppose when this was scheduled at the start of the season, they thought that the Ravens might be better. I'm not sure they considered that the Browns would ever be in contention, but both of these franchises have struggled, and this is a matchup that doesn't seem to have any playoff implications.
There are no playoff implications, but, you know, it's a funny Sunday because we talked about how great of a matchup that Pittsburgh-Seattle game is, and I sat here and I said to you, I don't want to bet it, though. And then there's Baltimore-Cleveland on Monday night here, stateside time, and it's a terrible matchup, but yet I will tell you, this is a game I want to bet. This is the game I actually want to put my money behind because I like Cleveland here giving 2.5 points at home on a Monday night. One, when do the Cleveland Browns ever get to host a prime time game? First of all, I couldn't tell you the last time that happened. Perhaps you could tell me. This is a moment in the national and international spotlight for the Browns, and they're going to be without Johnny Manziel in this game. Johnny Manziel, who for a moment there became the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns and looked to have his career resurrected, but you know, video popped up of him partying last week, which, were it any other player, might not be the biggest deal in the world, but with Johnny Manziel is always a red flag because that's seemingly what he prioritizes in life. He has lost his starting quarterback job, and Josh McCown is back in for the Browns. And, Dave, I'm here to tell you, Josh McCown's a better quarterback than Johnny Manziel. The Browns are better off with Josh McCown. They can actually win a football game with him.
Yep.
And I think they will win this game. So I think this really sets up nicely for the Browns. Then conversely, sort of we portended it earlier in another when we were talking about the Patriots just a moment ago. The Ravens don't have Joe Flacco. He's out for the season, busted up his knee last week. Justin Forsett now out for the season with a blown-out knee. We already know that Steve Smith is out of this lineup for the Ravens. Love the Browns here.
You mentioned Johnny Manziel, and I suppose that everyone's talking about Johnny Manziel at the moment, Gil. Is he just not very smart, Johnny Manziel? What's going on with him?
I think you're right, Dave. I just think that is the way to say it. You know, he's a young guy, right? So I guess we have to put in the disclaimer of, you know, young people make mistakes. But he's not the only young guy in the NFL. And given the opportunity to have one of 32 jobs in this world, right? There are only 32 starting quarterback jobs in the National Football League. And he was a big collegiate star here in the United States, and he was drafted with much fanfare by the Browns. He's been given several opportunities. And then finally, this last one, sort of resurrected. We didn't think we'd hear from Johnny Manziel again, and then all of a sudden we're like, wow, this kid actually might be something. He's been given the opportunity. The Browns have nothing to play for. Can he make the most of it? And then, bam, there he is just using poor judgment. And again, for those who don't know, his career, both college and pro, have been, I don't want to say the word plagued, but maybe plagued is the right word, plagued with a lot of partying incidents that leave a franchise who invests many millions of dollars in you with concerns, especially during the season, that perhaps you're not taking football as seriously as you ought to. Playing quarterback in the NFL is a cerebral job as well. You've really got to study up. And so if you're deciding to spend some of your time in clubs and in bars, at some point they'll just bench you. And not only is he not second string in this game, he's third string in this game. He's not getting in there. And being third string shows you how the Browns feel about Manziel at this point.
What is the expected protocol for a player on a bye, Gil? Is there one in the National Football League, or does it just depend on the management?
Yeah, I think Manziel, is an exceptional case. I think you are right. If that's you, if that's Dave Kellner with his spotless record, Lord knows your record is spotless, Dave. But if that's you who is spotted in the club but you've never had that behavior before, I'm not so sure on a bye week that's, you know, looked at in a way that where they're like, oh boy, Kellner, there he goes. You know, because you don't have any history of that.
Yeah.
But with Manziel, I mean, they have spoken to him about this. This is actually language in his contract where you're like, dude, you got to shape up. Like, if you want to be our franchise quarterback, take this seriously. And look, he's had to check into rehab. I mean, he's had some serious issues with this stuff. So for him to exhibit a behavior in season, regardless of the fact that it's a bye week, for him to exhibit some in-season behavior, again, they're investing millions. They have the right, I think, the Cleveland Browns to take this position. And like I said, from just a handicapping football perspective, bringing it back to our task, I like them with Josh McCown so much better than I like them with Johnny Manziel. Manziel will make plays. Here's how I would put it. Manziel will make individual plays that no other quarterback in the league might make just by ad-libbing, running around the field, tossing it up in the air, and having it magically caught on the other end. But in terms of just consistent, matriculating the ball down the field, sustaining 80-yard drives, McCown is the better choice.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Baltimore Ravens have serious personnel injuries. He talks about Joe Flacco going down. That ends his 137-game streak in the National Football League, which is an achievement in itself, Gil. Steve Smith Sr., rookie Breshad Perriman and Terrell Suggs all out as well. Experienced quality players that they haven't been able to really cope without. Did beat the St. Louis Rams last week, Gil, but it's going to be tough for them on Monday night.
It's going to be tough for them on Monday night. Look, we talked about the Seahawks earlier, who are 5-5, the Seahawks, but all five of their losses, they've had to leave the fourth quarter. The Ravens are 3-7, but they're a better football team than that 3-7 showed. I mean, they were in almost all of those seven losses, really, till late in the game. They actually had a chance to win or tie, and I believe six of those seven did the Ravens. So typically, if they had all their personnel, I would say to you, this is a much better football team, and don't worry about their record. They're a better team than the Browns, and I would probably lean Ravens based on whatever that line would have been. But look, the players just aren't there anymore. Flacco, who has been the fixture, as you just mentioned, for longer than any other NFL quarterback here in recent years, gone. And to see them without him, and then again, Forsett had a great year as a running back, and Steve Smith Sr. just makes play after play no matter how old he gets. He is one of the great wideouts in the NFL, future Hall of Famer. If this were the Patriots, I say to you, well, don't worry about it, Bill Belichick. They'll figure it out. But it's not. Poor John Harbaugh has had a really tough season. It's a lost season for the Browns, and I think the primetime stage for a lost season for the Ravens, I should say, and it's a primetime game at home for the Browns. Giving 2.5, I think Cleveland takes it, and they cover in the process.
Good stuff. Thank you, Gil. We'd usually do the five best bets for this weekend at this juncture, but it's just three this week. Already 2-0, Gil, and you'll have seen that on the Pick 6 video that's out online every single week here with William Hill. Detroit and Chicago already in for you, Gil. So your other three best bets this weekend.
Yeah, the other three that I'm making, we talked about two of them, and those are two in the primetime game. I love New England giving 3 at Denver, Brady against Osweiler. I like the Browns giving 2.5 at home against the Ravens, all those Ravens injuries, and the fact that the Browns get to play with Josh McCown. By the way, that's besides the fact that since week 6, the Browns' point differential of -18.5 has been the worst in the NFL by far. I mean, the Niners are next, but they're full 5 points better than that. I still like the Browns in that game. My fifth pick, one we have not touched upon, is the Houston Texans giving 3 against the New Orleans Saints. Saints are coming off a bye here, and a lot of advanced stats guys really like the Saints in this matchup. But I'm going to tell you, I think the Texans have the most underrated defense in the NFL right now. They showed that against the Bengals on a national stage a couple weeks ago at Cincinnati. They continued that play last week. I think you have J.J. Watt and Brian Cushing on all cylinders. I think this is one of the best defenses in the league, and Drew Brees is going to get up against it. They're not going to shut out the Saints, but they're going to slow them down enough. And Brian Hoyer is going to be able to exploit that Saints defense. Saints defense now without Rob Ryan at the helm. It'll be Dennis Allen at the helm for that Saints defense, the much maligned Saints defense, which has been by far the worst in the NFL this year. I like the Texans giving 3 as my fifth pick.
Superb. Thank you, Gil. And your podcast, the Beating the Book Megapod, back next week, along with Guessing the Lines, the podcast you record on Monday, Gil.
Yes, I took a week off for Thanksgiving, but for you, Dave, there is no Thanksgiving. I'm on, and I really enjoy you having me. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your company. Gil Alexander from Beating the Book podcast. Check him out at Beating the Book. You can follow myself on Twitter at D Kellner as well. Thank you once again, Gil, and look forward to catching up next week.
You too, Dave. Thank you. Good luck to everybody this week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.